Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Open three.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Chris Gasper and Jim Murray. Brought to you by Nissan, Shaking Crab, Mass General Brigham, and Tullamore 2 on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And finally, Dallas is going to get the ball over midcourt. And the Celtics.
Congratulations, John.
Dominant win.
You get your win.
And the wallet
this year.
Curse is lifted. A victory on the road trip. Final score here at the American Airlines Center. Celtics 124, Mavericks 95.
Welcome into the first Sports Hub Celtics Show 2023. Jim Murray, Chris Casper, Brian Robb, Mass Live, and you. If you'd like to join us at 617-779-0985. Jason Tatum messed around and had a kind of fake triple-double. And the Celtics' big win over the Dallas Mavericks in Dallas, 124-95. This little road trip continues tonight. They're going to be in San Antonio to take on the Spurs. But again, the second triple-double of his career for Jason Tatum in this win. And one, Chris Gasper, in case you missed his appearance on Felger and Maz yesterday, thinks it's a bit overrated. Dare I say, even kind of fake.
Yeah. I mean, look, they were up 25 after the third quarter. And at that point, he was 5 of 16 for 16 points. He had 4 of his assists in the fourth quarter when he played 9 minutes and 17 seconds of a game where Luka was out. Dallas had taken out other starters. It was against, you know, mostly bench players and backup guys. I don't really understand why he was in the game. I think someone who looks at that box score is going to be like, wow, the Celtics won that game because Jason Tatum had a triple-double. That's not why they won the game. They won the game because they put 6 guys in double figures, and they were playing really well. And even though Jason Tatum was 4 of 13 at halftime, they were still up by 18 points. And it's not all about points. He was rebounding, playing defense. He was contributing other ways. I don't dispute that. But I just think at the end of the game, people are going to look at that game who didn't see it and be like, wow, the Celtics ended the Mavericks' 7-game winning streak because Jason Tatum had a triple-double. And that's patently false.
No, it was more because of their defense than anything else. I mean, they absolutely smothered the Mavs the other night. Now, that's why they won that game. It wasn't so much the performance by Tatum. He had a good night, but I thought it was a bit overrated. And I think, and so I'm with you on this, like, he should definitely be in the MVP conversation.
100%.
If you look at any of the online sports books, he's no lower than third. It's between basically him and Doncic, with Nikola Jokic also in there. But, you know, in that, whatever the permutation is for 1, 2, and 3, he's absolutely in the conversation. I do think, though, and, you know, maybe I'm not using the right term here. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I get the feeling, Chris, that you think the people around here, Celtics fans, like, stick their heads in the sand and just ignore the play, specifically of Doncic, when it comes to this MVP candidacy for 22-23, and just say, no, it's Tatum. Tatum's the MVP.
Yeah. I think my argument would be, here it seems like it's like clear cut that Tatum's the MVP, and how could you choose anybody else? And also, it depends. Like, I think it comes down to what your criteria for MVP is, right? And so I've said this repeatedly. If your criteria is best player on the best team, then it's Tatum. I don't see how you vote for anybody else. But if your criteria is just best player in the league, I think you can vote for other people. And if your criteria is most indispensable player, in other words, if you took this guy off this team, they'd be the most screwed, then I definitely think you can vote for other people like Luka and Jokic. But here, it seems like whichever way you twist the argument, people say, well, it's Tatum. He's the most indispensable player. Who's the best player in the league? Tatum. Who's the best player in the best team? Tatum. That last one I agree with. The other two I do not.
So I haven't talked to you in a while, obviously, you know, but we're here. We're doing the show. Where's your head at with them as a whole? You know, because I, you know, even going back, because I thought they were in a bad stretch there, especially when they're out west. They have that kind of awful no-show against the Warriors, or it's a game that was reminiscent of the finals last year. They get blown out by the Clippers. They had the nice overtime win against the Lakers.
Awesome game. MVP, yeah. MVP caliber game for Tatum.
Tatum was awesome in that game.
And that's just quickly as an aside, that's my point. I guess that's my overall point. Like, there's a number of games you can point to this year and be like, what a performance by Tatum. That's why he deserves to be MVP. I don't have any problem with those games. My issue is now I feel like part of Celtics Nation and Celtics media is trying to turn every game into that game.
Yeah, right.
He has 9 turnovers against Brooklyn. This is why he's an MVP. He's 5 of 16 for 16 points after 3 quarters against Dallas, and stat polishes in the fourth quarter to get a triple-double. This is why he should be the MVP. There are actual games, many of them, that we can point to and say, this is why Tatum should be the MVP. But why does every game have to be, this is why Tatum should be the MVP, even when the performances don't warrant that?
Seems to me like your beef's more with, like, Celtics media, B-Rob, and fans than it is really Tatum himself.
No, my beef's not with Tatum. I don't have, it's not, I mean, he's out there. If I'm him, I'd want to be out there, too. He's, as long as you're out there, you might as well play as hard as you can and do what you can. That's not my beef. I don't have a problem with Tatum.
How do you respond for Celtics media, Brian Robb of Mass Live?
I don't know, that Dallas bench cut that lead to 15 in the middle of that fourth quarter. They need Tatum out there for every single minute. Watch the games, come on.
So again, so after that, they come home, they have those two ugly losses to the Magic, Chris, and then yeah. I thought they kind of righted the ship. I was there in the house on Christmas Day. They blow the doors off the Bucks, first time they play them this year, and I also thought Tatum was really good that day.
Oh, he was, again, another yeah. game. You want to point to MVP in that game? 100%. Yes.
But
yes.
I still don't know if I trust them because they lose to the Nuggets in Denver. And then that 150-117 thing to an undermanned Thunder team, which was a complete no-show. Marcus Smart loses his mind, gets ejected, gets fined for that. Like, where are you? What's your feeling on the team? Do you still trust them? Because
yeah.
I don't know if I really, deep down, gun to my head, trust them.
I trust them.
You do.
I think, like, really good teams at a certain, like, the pace they were on, I never thought was sustainable. They came out, like, every game was basically a replay of game 6 of the NBA Finals. And they came out with that fire. It's hard to sustain that for, you know, 6 months and 82 games. And I think a lot of times really good teams during the course of the year, like the general ennui of the NBA season sets in and you get a little bored. And I think that's all that's happened. I think they've just gotten a little bored. I still think that they are, when they're at their best, like their ceiling in the East is the highest of any team. I still think they're the best team in the East and their ceiling is the highest. However, I will say that even when they were 21-5, I never thought they were just going to run away with the East like everybody else did.
And B-Rob, again, we haven't been together in a little while. Where are you? I mean, you're covering this team night in, night out for Mass Live. Did they have your confidence shaken a little bit? Are you like me? Like, okay, they're really, yeah, I'm with, they're one of the best teams in the East, one of the best teams in the league. There's no doubt about that. But there's times, I still can't shake that Warriors loss. That reminded me so much of the finals going back now a few weeks. But other ones, too, like the no-shows against the iffy, at best, Magic team. There's games recently that just like, ugh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they've been playing 500 basketball for a month there. So I think there's very reasonable cause of concern. And it's not because of Tatum or Brown. It's because of everyone else. Before that Dallas game, like, this bench stunk.
Yeah, right.
Straight up stunk from, like, Brogdon looked terrible. Grant Williams was very inconsistent. The months of you being skeptical of Sam Hauser, Jim, is coming to pay off here when he's come falling back down earth in a hurry. So it makes me wonder here where, you know, we have a 40-game sample size now, guys, and it's like, what are the real Celtics? Are they the record-breaking offense we saw in the first 20 games, or they look like a very, you know, vulnerable team that we've seen in the last 20 games that could maybe use another body or two to, you know, at the trade deadline here to really, you know, shore things up?
Yeah, so with that, too, so they trade Noah Vonleh to San Antonio this week just basically to open up a roster spot. You have Jason Tatum liking tweets regarding Kemba Walker, who's been released, you know, basically playing like de facto GM. What do you think happens there with that open spot?
I think they're going to sign someone that's not Kemba Walker down the line or make a trade for a player like that. That's an awkward situation. I'm curious to see what you guys is like. Do you appease your superstar here and bring back Kemba? Or do you say, listen, we can't even play Peyton Pritchard right now. Like, what are we going to do?
I say the latter. And I also feel like part of Brogdon's struggles recently have been that he doesn't get consistent enough minutes. Like even in a game where Smart, I've said this before, even in games where Smart doesn't have it and is struggling, they'll stick with Smart, to me, to the detriment of Brogdon. Brogdon's in a challenging spot because he's in a different role. He has to come off the bench. The minutes aren't always consistent. He's not finishing games most nights. I think that's one of the projects for Joe Mazzulla over the rest of the season is he has to find a way to tap into Brogdon and get him going. Because by the time they get to the playoffs, Brogdon needs to be playing bigger minutes, and he's going to be your number three option. Like, when you get into these playoff series, when you get into these series where you're playing the same team 5, 6, 7 times in a row, you can't go into that and say Marcus Smart's going to be the third offensive option. Marcus Smart's going to play a ton of minutes. He's going to give you what he gives you, which is great defense and great playmaking. But there's a reason you brought in Brogdon, and Brad Stevens said it in the offseason. He said, I feel like we need more options. And that's why you brought in Brogdon to be that third option. So you have to get to a point where Brogdon's at his best. You sort of have to cater. Like, I know the Celtics are built to sort of cater to Tatum, Brown, and Smart, but you sort of have to cater to Brogdon the rest of this year so you have the best version of him in the playoffs so you can win.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point because the rotations, and even the closing lamps, there isn't really any consistency yet for this team. Like, it could be, it's kind of pick your poison any different night on that front. So in the next 40 games here, going leading the playoffs, that's on Joe Mazzulla here. You want to have all your guys playing your best, and I think, like you said, Chris, Brogdon's just a huge part of that equation when it comes to the playoffs.
And to answer your question, too, what you said, B-Rob, I'm actually with the former in that league. I think it's all about trying to appease your superstar. But, I mean, Kemba Walker's knee's been turned into dust here. Like, how many teams has he bounced around on in, like, the last couple of years? Like, it feels like four, five. Like, he's cooked. He's completely cooked. So, no on that one. You know, again, you got to appease your superstar. They get to act like a de facto GM. But on that one, I'm sorry. No, the spot's not going to be filled by Kemba Walker. A couple open lines you want to join us. We'll get to your calls coming up here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. What do you think of Chris Gasper's MVP take on Jason Tatum?
Yeah, let's talk about the All-Star voting, too.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Yeah, we'll get to that. Something else Chris wants to say that you people are out of your minds about. 617-779-0985.
Celtics talk coming up on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Tatum out deep on the right. Celtics looking to put this one on ice. Tatum by Lawson all the way to the basket. Got it to Derek White, who faked the three. It would have been an assist, but instead, White went to the basket and made the shot. They can't give him an assist on that.
Yeah, Derek White. Kind of screwed that one up.
113-88. If White had just taken the shot and made it, that would have been a triple-double. And according to the official score, they did give it to him.
What?
Hardy makes.
Fake triple-double.
What's that thing? Fake.
It was at the very least overrated. And, you know, it just feels like stat padding. And I hate, you know, I'm with you on this. It's welcome back, Sports Hub Celtics Show. It's Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, get Brian Robbenmass live covering the Celtics with us as well. In any sport, I hate stat padding, but you do see it a lot in that league more than any other.
No, it's true. It does happen. It definitely happens. And again, I'm not putting it on Tatum. I mean, as long as he's out there, he wants to play. You want to perform. You always want to perform well when you're out there. My issue is more sort of like, well, one, why is he out there for that long? Overall, two, why are we? I guess what bothers me about it too is that I just look at the history of the Celtics organization, and I know that the Celtics, the thing that makes the Celtics sort of unique is that they're measured in one thing and one thing only, championships. It's never been about individual accomplishments. They've never had anybody lead the league in scoring. They've never even had a guy average 30 points per game, which Tatum could do this year. So it's not about that stuff. It's never, and this is a team, and this is why it bothers me. As well, I want this team to be at its best in June. This is a team that can win a championship. I want this team to win a championship. I want Tatum to be MVP of the NBA Finals. And anything that I feel like potentially gets in the way of that or derails that, I'm not in favor of.
So everyone here thinks he's MVP. Don't bring up Luka Doncic's name. No, it's MVP, MVP, MVP. It's Jason Tatum. So that being said, then why the first All-Star bell, it's released Thursday. Jason Tatum, fourth. Why is he fourth in fan voting for Eastern Conference frontcourt players? He's behind Kevin Durant in Brooklyn, Giannis, that's a given, and Philly's Joel Embiid. If he's MVP, MVP, you feel that way here. Why doesn't the rest of the nation feel that way?
It's a great point if it's such a no-brainer. And that was sort of my point on Luka, was that, again, I think outside of here, it's a discussion, but I think outside of here, most people would take Luka over Tatum. Whereas here, it's like, well, no brainer. It's Tatum. Tatum, you know, plays defense. And I'll fully admit, Tatum's the better two-way. He's a much better two-way player than Luka. He's a much better defender.
Oh, Doncic doesn't even play defense,
Luka.
Really.
Oh, it's not even close. But that's not the sole measure of who's a, you know, this isn't the Selke. We're not looking for the best two-way player or the best, defensive, forward. This is not Patrice Bergeron with the Selkie. This is the MVP of the NBA, and there's been a lot of play. I mean, Steve Nash was never a great defender. He won back-to-back MVPs. Larry Bird won 3 straight MVPs. He was an excellent help defender, which Luka is. Luka's a good help defender, but not a great on-ball defender. Nobody here in the 80s was talking about, well, you know, actually, this guy's a better on-ball defender than Larry Bird. I mean, that never happened.
I never heard that in my life.
Yeah, so it sort of reminds me of, like, when Rondo was here. It's like Rondo had a specific skill set. Part of that was he was the best playmaking point guard. So suddenly it was like, well, playmaking is what defines the best point guard. This is why Rondo's better than Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook. It's all selective.
All right, first call here this afternoon on the Sports Hub Celtics show will be our guy Dean in Shrewsbury. Hey, Dean.
Hey, it's driving me crazy. I agree with you, Gasper. Tatum shouldn't be playing that much in the fourth quarter. Over the past 4 years, he's played more basketball than anybody in the world. He's played FIBA, he's played the COVID season, and he's played the Olympics, and he's led the NBA in minutes. They should be finding a way to limit his minutes more. I know they're keeping him out of some games, but they need to do more. P.S. on your record of getting to work, 68% is pretty good, but it would have been even sweeter if it was 69% or more.
Dean.
Nice, Dean.
I didn't expect that from Dean. That was not the comment I expected from Dean.
That was great.
Dean's so, like, fact-based. I wasn't expecting that one. He caught me off guard there.
Well, even the analytical guys like to get it in. What can I say?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so again, the usage of Jason Tatum here, but if you're the organization, and especially if you're still Joe Mazzulla with the interim tag hanging over you, like, how much power are you to have to say, hey, we want to sit you out or limit your minutes? If he wants to chase the MVP,
yeah,
in that league, you know, players typically do. Like, yes, the focus, you'd like to think, is the championship, and I'm sure that it is. But I think part of the focus here for Tatum, too, is to get the MVP. And so he wants to be out there. But when you're dealing with the bad wrist and, like, you have to – I would think if I was also him if I was him, I'd like to, you know, just the eye on the prize, win the title, and the MVP shouldn't be that important, but that's crazy talk. I mean, it is important.
It is important to him. I get it.
He's going to want to be out there.
Yeah,
how do you save him from himself?
I just think they have to work harder to strike a balance, right? I mean, I get it. He wants to win it. I understand why he wants to win it. And in a lot of ways, his pursuit of it helps the team. I just feel like they have to pull back the reins a little bit, though. And it needs, just like the other day, where Jaylen Brown said, hey, you know, we kind of had this one coming.
After the OKC.
The OKC game and sort of was intimating they were sort of sleepwalking through games. I think, and he was able to refocus the team. They were refocused. They had a great effort against Dallas. Maybe there's a way to kind of refocus Tatum a little bit if he needs it on, hey, look, we're in this for the long haul, man. It's only early January. You're going to be playing games for another 6 months, and you're going to be playing some games that are more important than this one against Dallas, where you played well enough and we played well enough as a team to wrap this thing up after 3 quarters, and Luka doesn't have it tonight and his ankle's bothering him and he's limping around. We got this one in the bag. So 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, we're going to pull you out, as opposed to playing 9:17 of the fourth quarter and then clearly the end of the quarter, you know, trying actively to get the triple-double. And then, I don't fault Tatum for them awarding it to him. I mean, that's just phony NBA stat-keeping, but anybody who looks at that, just listen to the call from Wallach and Max. It's exactly what I said. He passed it to Derek White in the corner. He up-faked. Derek White took 4 dribbles to the rim. How is that an assist?
Yeah. Let's go to, speaking of Joe Mazzulla, Patrick in Charlestown with a thought on the interim coach. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, I love Joe, but one thing about Ime, he knew kind of when to lay down the law. He knew when to get tough. And I think some of those losses against, like, the Thunder and the Magic, I hate to say it because I'm a big Joe guy. I wonder if, Joe's got to get a little tougher on the guys, too. Thank you, boys.
Well, he has been tough at times. I know after the Clippers loss, he read those guys the Riot Act. You know, I was out on that trip. And then everything you read from what happened before Dallas, he basically called out a lot of the role players on the team and challenged them. I'm reading, you know, from Jay King in The Athletic talking about they didn't hold a shoot around Thursday morning before that Dallas game. And Joe Mazzulla came inside the hotel, and he challenged the role guys, the supporting cast, to do better. So I think Mazzulla's kind of like Brad. He's not going to do it publicly. Ime would do it publicly, which was the difference. And B-Rob, I'm interested for your take on that. Because Ime did it publicly, I felt like maybe it resonated a little bit more with these guys because it was for everybody to see. And it seems like Joe is sort of more like Brad, where he will call guys out, but it's more kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think that probably speaks to, too, the fact that he's still interim coach right now and he doesn't have that capital yet. And I think he's more of a player's coach in general than Ime in terms of being someone who, you know, relates to these guys well. And like I said, putting Tatum out there to get that triple double or letting these guys get their stats. So, but I do think the fact that they respond like this Thursday, that was a big test for him because that OKC game was
embarrassing.
Exactly. It was the most points they gave up in a game since 1979, which is bananas. So
yeah, that's insane.
For them to come back out of that game, and I would argue like they didn't have the best shooting night against Dallas, but the quality of shots they got in that game was terrific. And they brought it, I think, two ways potentially for the best they had all year long. And whether that sustains or not is the question. But that was, I think, a big test for him, and I think he passed with flying colors there.
No, yeah. I agree on that. That was a huge – I mean, that is indicative of your – ability as a coach to get your team to respond. They responded big time against Dallas.
617-779-0985, the phone number. A couple open lines. You want to join us, talk Celtics here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show. We'll get to your calls coming up next.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show. Bang. On the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now it's time to talk Celtics.
Wow, good offensive rebound.
With Chris Gasper and Big Jim Murray on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dig.
Hey, welcome back, Sports Hub Celtics Show. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, Brian Robb, Mass Live, and you. A couple open lines you want to join us, talk to 617-779-0985. We'll go to, who is this? Don and Carver, next year on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hey, Don. Hello, Don. Don and Carver. Don, if you want to try back, 617-779-0985. Josh and Canton on the MVP race. I'm guessing you're for Jason Tatum.
Yeah,
Josh?
Thanks for taking my call. So I feel like the MVP race has changed in the last couple of years with Jokic winning it twice, even though his team like hasn't necessarily been as good as some other candidates. And I feel like that kind of hurts Tatum because I feel like now the award is going to guys who have like more impact on their team, even if it doesn't necessarily show them the team success. And I feel like that just favors guys like KD and Luka and even Jokic, who's also in first place. But I feel like he has a much bigger like impact on his team. That's why I feel like if they're going to be consistent, I'm not sure if like Tatum's going to end up winning this award in the end. So,
well, it feels to me, Josh, and you tell me, I think you maybe feel the same way, Chris, is like now it feels like the voting is if you removed player X from this team, they'd be absolute garbage. And that's why Nikola Jokic has won it these last couple of years. And this is why, you know, you look at someone like Doncic and why so many people like nationwide say, no, he's the clear-cut MVP. And I tend to agree with that. Like, if you took Luka off Dallas, they're garbage.
Oh, they're terrible. I mean, they're like bottom of the barrel.
If you took Tatum off this team, they're not garbage.
I think they're still a playoff team.
Yeah, they're still a playoff team.
They're like a play-in team, they're probably. They're a middler. But they're not completely out of it.
Yeah. So, and is that wrong for the voting to go that way?
It's not wrong because it's subjective. I can't tell you it's wrong. I mean, it would be a factor for me in the voting. I can't tell you it would be my number one factor. It sort of depends on the year. I also know that a lot of the analytics stuff is playing into it. And that's why I think you hear a lot about Tatum's defense, because analytically speaking, it says that his defense is excellent. And I do think he's a very good defender. On the other hand, though, I sort of go back to what that caller just said in terms of impact on winning and losing. When I look at Tatum's defense, I feel like it's excellent, but is he the best defender on this team? I mean, I defenders on this team, I would rank ahead of Tatum because I think they're very good defenders, not because Tatum's not a good defender, but Robert Williams, Marcus Smart, he's a defending DPOY.
Yeah.
Derek White, I think, is a fantastic defender. And then I would have Tatum there. And has there been a game this year where you've looked at it and been like, oh, man, you know, Tatum really locked up the other team's best player? Like, did that happen when they lost to the Clippers with Leonard and Paul George going off? What about when Donovan Mitchell went off against them? When Klay Thompson and Steph Curry went for 30 apiece against them? What's the game this year where Tatum...
No, there isn't one.
And he's done it in the past. Like, he did it to Kevin Durant in the playoff series last year. If he were doing that every night, I mean, that's like Jordan level where you're impacting the game at both ends like that. If he were doing what he did to KD every night or almost every night in this season, then I'd be on board with the, like, he should win this because of the defense and it's so much better than these other guys argument. I just, other than what the number adds up to and comes out to when you look at defensive impact, I just don't see it impacting their winning commensurate with that number.
Don in Carver is back with us. Hey, Don.
Hey, I'm here. And I think that as much as I love Tatum, Jokic is definitely, for me, the MVP this year.
Well, it's, look, he's right now, it depends on, again, I mentioned this earlier, if you look at you know, some of the online sports books, you know, he's still in it. You know, there, it's a permutation of Doncic, Tatum, and Jokic, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and I think that's right.
Yeah, and yeah, it's like, I always, you know, it always does bug me in any sport, though, that the MVP voting is before the season's, it's just for the regular season. It doesn't include the playoffs. I always thought it should include the playoffs. Because Jokic being, I get it, like, you know, why he would be the MVP these last couple of years, but, I mean, that team has done squat in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to gauge. This is where it gets tough, right? Because some of these teams, some of these guys, like Doncic obviously doesn't have the supporting cast that Tatum does. And that can work both ways. That works against Tatum in some regards in terms of the numbers he puts up. It works for him in terms of visibility and people saying, wow, when you do have great games, it's like, wow, this game, this guy's performance, like his play really impacts winning. Jokic is somewhere in between in that he puts up great numbers. His supporting cast is better than Luka's, but not anything like what Tatum has. And so is that sort of where people go? MVP is a funny thing to me. Like, I always say this. I think if you look back as a basketball historian 20 years from now, they're going to look at it and be like, wait a second. You guys gave Kobe Bryant one MVP and you gave Steve Nash back-to-back MVPs. What were you thinking?
Well, here's Luke in Vermont to yell at you about the MVP.
Yes. Hey, Luke. Wants to yell at me about this.
I'm not going to yell at you guys, but I agree with a lot of what you're saying. And one thing that was great about the 2008 Celtics is that all those guys put aside personal stuff and just wanted to win. Nobody averaged 25. Nobody was stat padding. It was truly all about winning. He's not top 4 or 3 in the All-Star voting against him. That's a popularity contest. Nobody thinks LeBron is the best, but he's number 1 in voting. I just think it should be an eyeball test. And I think if Tatum was on the Mavericks, he would impact winning more. You're right. Luka means more to his team than Tatum does to his, because Tatum has a better surrounding cast. It cuts both ways. And it really comes down to an eyeball test. And I think this year there's more guys in the running than there has been in a long time.
That's true.
KD, Tatum, Luka, all those guys deserve to be in the discussion. Joker, I get it. I just think when you're making the case for Tatum, you have to mention the defense, because that's like an asset to his game. It's not that it's all about defense, but it's like that's something he does really well. And he did lock up Ja Morant at the end of the Memphis game in a big game when him and Ja were going toe-to-toe. And I just think we didn't count it against Steph Curry when he had Klay Thompson on his team, you know, when he was winning MVPs and he was on the best team in the best league. It just, I think it's hard because everybody has a different view of MVP. And if, like you said, if it's best player on best team, it's Tatum. If it's guy with the best stats, it's Luka. And I just, it's impossible. I'd like it to be the eyeball test. And if we're going by the eyeball test, I think Tatum deserves to be in the discussion. He is not the clear-cut best player. He's not the clear-cut MVP, but he's in the discussion. And if I was him, and as a fan, I would much rather him hold up the MVP of the finals at the end of the year than the regular season MVP.
Oh, yeah, unquestionably. I agree with all of that.
So he didn't want to yell at you.
No, not really. The only thing I slightly disagree with, and it's a slight disagreement, is I just don't think, like, I think if you put him on Dallas, the numbers would be great. I don't think he can make play the guys around him better in the same way that Luka can. Like, Luka's just such a fantastic passer, and the Celtics actually held him to a season-low 3 assists. But I think that, to me, that's the difference. Like, Luka's ability to playmake can elevate some pretty ordinary guys to a level where, like, you can be a playoff team. I think that Tatum would put up great numbers in Dallas, but I don't think the team would be as good because he's a different type of player than Luka. He's not the same type of playmaker that Luka is.
Seth and Taunton, next here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hey, Seth.
Hey, gentlemen. So I just wanted to ask a question about our point guard depth. I mean, it's a little obscene right now with Smart, White, Brogdon, and Pritchard, who is not a starter by any means, but he's functional. Would you guys want to trade one of those to give us some depth somewhere else, maybe a big man or somebody that can spell Brown and Tatum a little bit? Or would you want to hold on to them as insurance because, I don't know, it's guaranteed someone's getting hurt before the playoffs?
I mean, B-Rob, I don't know how you feel, but I would move Pritchard. I just don't know how much value there is there for him. I would consider moving White, not because I want to move on from him, but just to rebalance the roster. Like, I can't think of a name right now, but if I could get a pretty good wing who was on a multi-year – the problem is the guy has to be on, like, a multi-year contract. Like, do you want to move Derek White? And this trade wouldn't work because – Sacramento has ball handler type guys and De'Aaron Fox and Kevin Herter. But let's say hypothetically you could move Derek White for, say, Harrison Barnes. That sounds good, except for Harrison Barnes is going to be a free agent, and that makes it tough. And you have Derek White under control. So I would consider White, but it would have to be like the perfect deal. And Pritchard, I would definitely shop for more wing depth or big.
And B-Rob, is there any chance they would even shop Malcolm Brogdon?
I don't think there's any chance they would shop Brogdon this year for the fact that they just traded him for him a few months ago, and he picked them. So I think that would be a tough look for the organization on that front. But I do think everything else has to be considered. I know for a fact the Celtics have, you know, they're not taking calls on Pritchard, but teams are calling about him because he's not playing. And they say, oh, this guy obviously helped this team last year, so we could clearly use him. It's tough to envision them finding the right deal for White or for Pritchard, given how they value those guys and all the moving parts involved. But there's no question that to better balance the roster, that has to be investigated here in the next month, and they have those guys as well as some trade exceptions to do it here before the trade deadline next month.
Wait, I just want to back up on one thing you said. They feel it's hard to find the right deal for Pritchard?
Not the right deal for the right deal that makes sense for them. Like,
are they looking to win?
Is it hard to find the right player? Like, in other words, this player will help us enough.
Right.
You know,
is this player going to help us more than Pritchard? Because Pritchard offers good insurance if Malcolm Brogdon or Marcus Smart gets hurt, which is, I think, is a decent chance that happens in the second half of the season, given those guys' track records.
And I get...
I don't like that. Pritchard's barely playing for
right.
you. If the guy's going to help you by playing. I mean, the insurance card, you're loaded at point guard, and your two best players can also be primary ball handlers. And Al Horford is another guy who can function as a playmaker. So
that's good points.
That sounds like overkill to me. Like, if anything, I'd like another wing. Like, where you really need the insurance is for Robert Williams, one. And two, what's your insurance for, like, Tatum and Brown not getting injured to the point where they can't play, but to the point where their minutes need to be seriously managed? Like, what are you going to do then? Who's your backup wing?
Justin Jackson is new for you?
No. I have to say, like, I think this team has great chemistry. Like, just being able to observe them in the locker room and stuff, they get along, like, really well. And I don't think you can underestimate that. So, like, I'm not in a rush to move on from guys like Luke Kornet and Justin Jackson. You can see the chemistry, like, on this team, and those guys are part of that. But, and Peyton Pritchard's part of it too. But if you're going to bring in somebody that can give me insurance at another position when I'm four deep at point guard with my two best players also as primary ball handlers, I'll figure out life without Peyton Pritchard.
And call me crazy. Like, I get it from a PR standpoint. You couldn't have Brogdon on the table, B-Rob, but I don't know. I think these things should also be performance-based. And so if there was some interest there, and you could get, I don't know, like a, some depth as a bit at a bit at big or anything like that, like it should maybe be on the table. Just don't say no, we can't do that because we just got this guy and we just traded for him, because if it is performance based, he's sucked for a month. And in fact, like his whole time here so far, I think has been meh at best.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think defensively he's been a bit disappointing too. Like the numbers, the on off numbers of him defensively, they are far worse of him on the court and particularly in crunch time. So I think that makes sense, Jim, in terms of like balancing the roster. If they could find anything for him that gets you a wing to give you to balance things out better, I would definitely look into it. Whether or not that deal is out there remains to be seen. But it does make, if contending is clearly your number one goal here, then you can't worry about hurting people's feelings. And that goes for a guy like Danilo Gallinari too, that's a contract you can move without taking away from your roster, even though, again, that could look not great in terms of the chemistry standpoint.
Well, one more segment to go in the Sports Hub Celtics show. You want to get in on it, 617-779-0985. That's coming up in our long commercial-free segment next.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Celtics show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sports Hub Celtics show drives the lane. On your home of the Celtics, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Yeah, final segment of the Sports Hub Celtics show here, and then we will segue into the final hour of the first Gasper Murray of 2023. If you want to join us here at Talk Celtics, 617-779-0985. So Celtics guard Marcus Smart fined $35,000 for directing inappropriate language toward a game official when he lost his mind in the third quarter of the loss to the Thunder, that blowout loss to the Thunder on Tuesday. So not a good look there, but there was something with Marcus Smart that stood out to you, Chris, that you think is a good look.
Yeah, I think, you know, he talked about the way Jaylen Brown spoke to him after that game and sort of going into the next game against Dallas. And the Celtics, I think, released a video of the post-game scene after the win over Dallas, and Smart, in front of everybody, was talking about how he was proud of Jaylen Brown. I think there's been like a little bit of a shift here in terms of Marcus Smart being able to recognize that the leaders of this team are Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And he said, you know, I'm proud of JB. I'm proud of the way he's been playing. I'm proud of his leadership, and I'm proud of the way he's been responding. So I'm thankful for that. And he also spoke about Brown coming to him, like I said, after that Oklahoma City game and lifting him up. I think that's a great sign. I think that's a really great sign to see sort of the maturation of Jaylen Brown, the maturation of Marcus Smart, and just how in tune those two guys are and really the trio of Tatum, Brown, and Smart are. And if Smart, I've always said, you know, about Smart, I mean, if he's willing to sort of accept his role and accept his place, he is a real asset to the team. You know, a lot of my issues with over the year with Smart have been sort of when he goes, in my opinion, sort of outside of what his place on the team is and outside of what his role is, and, you know, the whole longest tenured Celtic thing. Or
the ego to talent issue is out of whack.
Or against Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals in Game 7, where it's like, oh, I'm going to deliver the dagger.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I'm going to deliver. But wait.
Yeah, please stop shooting.
Three-pointer number 4 is the dagger. And it's like, look at the scoreboard. Miami's coming back here. Like, this is a problem. It's like when that happens.
Well, I think this is the key thing, Chris. It's why I still deep down don't really trust them. I mean, they're one of the best teams in the league, no doubt. But I don't know. Like, it's the ego thing, the clash of the egos, whether or not these guys can keep it together. And so much of that is whether or not Marcus Smart realizes his role, like you say. And so, no, that's good.
I think it's really good.
Yeah. I hope it's sustainable. That's all. Robert Williams, he was back Thursday, missed the Tuesday game, the blowout to OKC. How have you looked at his usage? Should he be starting?
I think eventually he'll get to starting. I think they'll get there eventually. I haven't had a real problem with his usage. You know, I kind of like what they're doing with him. I feel like they're playing for the long term with Robert Williams, which as much as I've criticized Joe Mazzulla and the Celtics for not doing that with Tatum and Brown, they're absolutely doing the right thing with Time Lord.
B-Rob?
I'm kind of ready for them to get back to the starting lineup that we saw last season. Because, and this might have to go with the trade deadline coming up and adding in another big that you feel comfortable playing to take some pressure off those guys. But that lineup was so good in the second half of last season, guys. And they've barely played it at all this year because they are committed to playing Al Horford and Rob Williams 48 minutes at center, which makes sense given the fact that you don't really trust Luke Kornet or Blake Griffin to play big minutes behind those guys. But I think you have to see what that lineup looks together better. You know, see what they look like this year compared to last year. See if that magic is still there for that group. And you can't wait all season long to do that. I think that you need to start that process now. And Rob Williams looks good enough where I want to see more of it like right away here, especially defensively with the rim protection.
Jake and Andover, next year, Sports Up Celtics show. Hey, Jake.
Hey, guys. So I just want to say, I think it's outrageous that we're even thinking about the Malcolm Brogdon thing. I know you said, yeah, he had a rough month. Yes, that is true. He had like six games. I think he scored under 10 points. But again, and I know Chris brought up his defensive numbers. We did not bring Malcolm Brogdon here to be a defensive showstopper. I don't know where you guys got that message from. We need somebody that's going to be a second unit general when Tatum and Brown inevitably go cold. We lost the Warriors game because we went cold on offense. We can sacrifice a little bit of a defense for a guy that can still put up 20, 25 points a night. So the first guy off your board has to be Pritchard and Derek White, because they're comparable, yes, but Malcolm Brogdon is significantly superior to both of those guys on the offense, and that's where we struggled. So, yes, I agree. We need to get rid of somebody like that to get a strong power forward that has a defensive mindset if Robert Williams goes down, because that was where we sucked, at the rim protection and instant offense off the bench.
Yeah, Jake, look, and I know it's a pipe dream. They're not going to, you know, move on from Malcolm Brogdon. He's also a proven playoff performer. He, you know, you brought him in to be a closer. It's one of the things that they missed last year in the finals, is not having, you know, some offense off the bench. I'm just saying they shouldn't build a brick wall on him in case someone really was interested, and you could end up adding a wing or a big, you know, again, it's a pipe dream, it's a hypothetical, but it's just, I don't look at it as like, oh, no, we can't do that. They wouldn't want to do it simply for PR reasons, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of more with the caller. I think Malcolm Brogdon's a big part of this thing, but I also understand your point that you can't just say the guy's untouchable. You never know what deal could be offered up. I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, you know, what would be that deal? But I don't know, like hypothetically, let's say, and I don't know contract situations, but Toronto, I don't think this would ever happen. But if Toronto said, hey, we'll give you OG Anunoby or Scotty Barnes, again, I don't think they would ever do this, but we'll give you OG Anunoby or Scotty Barnes for Malcolm Brogdon, I'd make that deal in a heartbeat.
Yeah, right. And it sounds, you know, like, again, hypothetically speaking, it sounds like, you know, the John Collins era is ending in Atlanta. If he was available and Brogdon was some part of a trade, you're just going to say no just because you brought this guy in? And I think that's crazy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the problem is for Brogdon is he's almost a little overpaid right now for what he's doing. Like, he's a very productive player, but he's making over $20 million. He's into his 30s at this point, so a lot of those teams, like, you'd make those trades, but you're probably going to have to sweeten the pot a lot, and that's where you might run into trouble for the Celtics.
So it's been a while since we've all been together, and for those that haven't been paying attention, the Brooklyn Nets all of a sudden are just one game behind you in the Eastern Conference, 9-1 in their last 10. They've been red hot. They somehow have been able to keep their heads together. It's kind of crazy. Kevin Durant's playing out of his mind. What have been your guys' thoughts on the Nets and the Eastern Conference and how it's been shaping up here the last few weeks?
B-Rob, I'll let you go first on that.
I'm really eager for this matchup on Thursday. I'll say that. I haven't watched a ton of them right now, but Jock Vaughn, who took over there instead of Ime Udoka, like, he's got the buy-in from the stars. And those guys, those supporting cast, is kind of, they're getting healthy. Guys like TJ Warren coming off the bench there are giving them something. Joe Harris is back healthy. Ben Simmons isn't doing much, but he's at least staying on the floor. And so I'm not sure how real it is yet, because they haven't played a ton of teams that are contenders during this streak, but I do think that they're going to be right there for you for the number one seed in the East the rest of the way, along with the Bucks and a host of other teams right now. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this battle plays out.
I don't know what the defensive numbers say. I haven't looked them up, and I know Simmons, his numbers are not super impressive, but I think he's given them sort of what they need, which is, he's a good defender, he's a good distributor, He's not someone who needs the ball and is going to take up a lot of shots, which is great when you have Kyrie and Kevin Durant on the same team. And then Royce O'Neal's been good for them lately as well. So they've showcased sort of a little more depth. Nick Claxton is like their Robert Williams. I think they're legit. I do. I ultimately don't think they're an elite defensive team, and I think that will sort of be their undoing. Are they good enough defensively? Durant, to me, is not what he used to be defensively. Kyrie has always sort of been a defensive liability when he's out there. I think that could be their undoing, but they certainly have enough offense, and Claxton gives them that shot blocking, rebounding edge in the paint. And like I said, Royce O'Neal's been very good for them of late. So it seems like the pieces fit, and they have shooting. That's one thing. Like in this league, you know, you need outside shoot. When you have guys like Kyrie, Durant, Joe Harris, TJ Warren, guys like that who can make shots from the outside, you're never going to be out of a game.
I find it unbelievable, though, considering how this season started and that Kyrie Irving was suspended by the league for anti-Semitism. Really? Like, it felt like, oh, they're you don't
oh
have
my
to
God, that feels like a million years ago.
Right, though? And it feels like, well, but it also felt at that time like, well, you're going to worry about the Nets. They're going to be a complete dumpster fire.
Yeah.
That they're a game back of the Celtics at this point is unbelievable to me. And it's still, I can't help but think, like, give it time. Kyrie will do something else and F it all up. But, you know, credit, like you said, B-Rob, to Jacques Vaughn. They take the interim tag off, and it feels like he does have buy-in with those guys.
They were 9-11
right,
a month ago. It is, to your point, it's bananas to think, like, you could – the documentary on this Nets season, if they somehow, like, make it to the finals or something like that, will be must-see TV based on where they came from here. But there's a long way to go. But – and they – I think – I expect them to be as aggressive as any team heading into the trade deadline, too. They have a lot of picks and stuff left over from that James Harden trade.
Well, they got to try to find a way to move on from the Aussie. The kid that's been useless. The former number one pick.
Simmons.
Yeah, Simmons.
Oh, Ben Simmons. Yeah. Oh, you want to move? Yeah, I could see that. I could see. Although, again, I mean, I'm not saying he's the reason they've turned it around there, but he does. He's probably one of their better defenders on a team that's not really great defensively.
All right, so wraps this show for today. You continue to call in on the Celtics. You have any thoughts, have at it at 617-779-0985. We will be football heavy, though, for the final hour of the show of Gasper Murray as we get into that after the headlines here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.